The Pure Jamie Milne Podcast. Where we have a dream to create a community full of happy, healthy, and knowledgeable people who create global positive change through sharing their journey. Tune in, saddle up, and listen in. Be inspired.
Well, Warren, I really appreciate your time. The more I went and chased the white rabbit of Warren Alcock, the more I realised you're a very busy man and really quite remarkable to and I feel very privileged to just sit with you and just have a chat, to be honest. So thank you for making the time for little old me over in the Sunshine Coast. And I really appreciate it. And I'm sure got very simple, some simple questions, but yeah. Found in my world, sometimes the simple, basic questions elicit the greatest and most profound resources and answers and stuff like that. So I'm really, really looking forward to chatting to you, and sort of cycling through and having a look. A couple of things that stood out. So obviously you're a sports lawyer and probably regarded as one of the best, if not the best, in New Zealand and in sport. And it was I saw the New Zealand Rugby Chief Executive, Steve Tu, is that his name? Said you're probably the most influential agent in the country. And then there was many, many accolades around your influence, your professional experience and your diversity and what you do for New Zealand sport. And then, of course, the world of rugby in particular. It was really quite amazing. And one of the things that drew me initially to you beyond, it seems like, would it be near 30 years, your career?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, which is absolutely remarkable. The thing that drew me to you and sort of connected us, for want of a better term, was your pull-up campaign for Movember, and of which the last time I saw you raised about $6,000. Is that correct, Warren, or did you raise a bit more in there in the end?
No, it was about $6,000. I can't recall the final amount, but it was in and around that amount. It was raising the money was just one aspect of it, and you know what it's like. You know, you do all your work with Dementia Australia, which is unbelievable. And Movember was a charity that we decided that we would participate in, because Movember, of course, I know it's in Australia as well, is about growing moustaches, isn't it? And
yeah.
So commonly that's what people have done for Movember. I've never participated in Movember, mainly because my wife, right from day one, we've been married 22 years, always told me the more facial hair I have, the less chances I've got of
longevity.
Benefits. Yeah, the benefits of marriage.
Clean shaven, morning, noon, and night.
It's all, I've always been clean shaven. It's got to increase my odds.
Stack the chips in your favour. Maybe moisturise too, mate, from one heterosexual male to another.
And so in our business, we had someone close to us pass away, and so we had decided as a team that we were going to honour him with a challenge, and so we decided we would all participate in Movember.
Mm.
And as that discussion developed, one of the guys said, well, you actually don't have to grow facial hair. You can actually do a physical challenge.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, well, that's me. I'll do the physical challenge rather than the facial hair. And it was kind of like, because all my workmates are kind of, they're guys that struggle to grow moustaches. And I was like, look, guys, I can grow a moustache in 2 days and I'll have it for the whole month. You guys grow it and you have it for about a week. It takes you 3 weeks.
Dunedin Westerlies or something to come and blow it off, mate.
I'd look like Grizzly Adams, And so the physical challenge was, right up my alley. And because we were doing it for someone who was close to us, I decided that it had to be something significant, and it had to be something that was really challenging for me personally. And, you know, when I mentioned it to one of my workmates, I said, I think I'm going to try and do 1,000 pull-ups in like 6 hours. Mm. And he was like, holy hell. He goes, that's next level, bro. he says, can you do them? And I said, oh, well, like I go to the gym and I might do 5 sets of 10 to try and get me to 50 with a like a minute in between them, you know, to recover. Yeah. And I said, that's kind of my extent of my pull-ups. So I was like, you know, like I know that setting myself 1,000 pull-ups in 6 hours is going to be a challenge. And like, I don't know if I can actually do it. And as we got closer to the start date for November, he kept saying to me, are you committing? Are you in? And I was going, oh, I don't know. So on the last day of October, I said to him, I said, I'm going to the gym for an hour. I'm going to do as many pull-ups as I can do in an hour. And if I can do a half-decent effort, I'm in.
Yeah.
So I went to the gym, and I think in 45 minutes I did 200. And so I rang him after. I said, I'm in. I'm going to do this. So, like, I know, like, I feel embarrassed when we talk about my 1,000 pull-ups when I compare them to your 8,000 effort that you're going to undertake.
Sorry, I haven't done it yet, bro.
But you will. Yeah, you know, I'm confident you will. So, you know, like, for me personally, 1,000 pull-ups, you know, when I decided to do it, was like I often in those early days would wake up in the middle of the night going, holy hell, what have I done?
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, you start your preparation. I had about 3 weeks. I had 4 weeks, you know, because I decided to do it at the end of November. Mm-hmm. So I basically had 4 weeks to prepare myself.
It's a short window, by the way. Quite short.
Well, it ended up being 3 weeks because I roasted myself at the end of week three. So I couldn't actually do any in week four, which was probably a good thing because, you know, it allowed me basically effectively to taper and rest. Yeah. But November 1 rolls around and I go to the gym and I go, right, I'm going to do 400, you know, today. And of course, you wake up the next morning, you can't move. So that was the kind of motivation for, you know, setting myself that challenge. And
fair play to you, Warren. What a magnificent way to recognise your friend. I just think that's truly beautiful. What a great way to do it, you know. And like you said, in your mind, and I completely understand, it's only a challenge if it's a challenge. You know, the challenge is obviously unique and distinctive to the individual, and that's a challenge, you know, that. And to think, I think I read a statistic because I do get excited about statistics, so I was having a look around, and they say 75% of human beings can't even do one pull-up. So you're already, the fact you can just do one is, you know, quite incredible. That puts you in a very small demographic, and then to do 1,000, like 1,000 of anything is going to hurt, but 1,000 movements where you're defying gravity, you're actually pulling, there's no real momentum involved. You could argue maybe when you drop down there's a bit of momentum, but not a lot. So that really is quite incredible, and yeah, I'm sure you're proud of yourself and what
you should
really be celebrated. It was awesome
because you know what it's like with pull-ups. And everyone that does pull-ups understands this. You do get to a point where you start sort of, and you're kipping, you know, your legs are going, you're trying to catch it. And then once you're at that stage, you kind of bug it because you can't really do any more, can you? So I think in my mind, as I went through that 3 weeks of preparation, I was always worried that I was going to hit that stage. And then I'd be really battling. But, you know, for me, that three-week preparation, I did pull-ups every day in that 3 weeks. I was averaging kind of 300 or 400 pull-ups a day. And after advice from you, I think in week two I started using the weighted vest.
Yep.
So I think I had about a 10 kg weighted vest, and I was doing about 300 pull-ups a day. And then, you know, and so each week, you know, your conditioning's getting better. And the only issue I really had, because, you know, like I'm 58 now, and so when I did that last year, 57, the only thing that as I started to do more and more preparation and I started to get a little bit more confident, the only thing that worried me was injury.
Of course, yeah.
And, of course, you know, being my body's, you know, been through a bit. And so the one thing that really I battled with were my elbows. Yeah. And the ligaments in my elbows. So,
yeah.
You know, the muscles and all that I was using, they were fine apart from those elbows. And I had one elbow. I dislocated my elbow playing rugby years ago. Yeah. And part of the elbow sticks out where I dislocated it. And so every time I do a pull-up, it would click.
Yeah.
Just reminding me it's there.
It's like a little timer, a little metronome, just to remind.
Yeah. And so, like, I'm a great believer that if you set yourself a challenge and you plan properly and you do your conditioning properly and all the other aspects, you know, like, the biggest thing for any challenge is the mental aspect.
Yeah, totally.
And so, you know, while you're training, you're conditioning, you're also training your mental aptitude, aren't you?
Yeah.
And even although we kind of all have that innate kind of mental sort of fighter in us.
Yeah.
You find that, you know, you're doing every day, you're also training that mental aptitude for that particular challenge, you know, like, you know, you'd have those days where you wake up and you're sore and you go, God, I don't want to go to the gym today. I don't want to do any more pull-ups. But you go because you've got that challenge, you've got that goal. And to get yourself from that point of not wanting to do it to actually going back into the gym, you've had some techniques in your mind, whether consciously or subconsciously, which is sort of fine-tuning your mental aptitude, isn't it? Or you're at the gym and you're at, you know, you're going to do 400, but you got to 300 and you go, I can't do any more today. And then you just find that something inside you that just makes you do that last 100.
I think that's where the magic is exactly what you're talking about. It's that finding the fuel in the empty tank when you really do think you're spent. It's... And I used it for a very long time. I had this belief that, yes, it was primarily mental, you know, these endurance feats and like what you just did and what others do. But I've grown to understand and become aware that I believe it's 100% of both. If you turn up undercooked, like you said, like if you don't do your conditioning, if you're not in the gym, if you're not doing the work, you will get found out or we'll get found out. And if you haven't flexed that muscle in your mind and developed and calloused and harnessed the tenacity and the resilience and the focus to do that mentally, you're going to get found out. So to be short in any department, especially like you said, with these with the real big challenges, with the legitimate challenges that you got to turn up ready to go. And that when we know we've left no stone unturned, it's such a glorious feeling when you get on the other side, when you've done when you've truly done your best. And when you get the chocolates as well, when you get the prize, it's like, oh, it was all the sacrifices were worth it for yourself and obviously the people, important people around you. Who sacrificed as well. But, mate, I didn't realise you were 57 when you did it.
Yeah, 57 years old, yeah.
Oh, my God. That's a bloody champion effort, mate. That's the best.
I keep reminding my kids and my wife about that.
You're getting some runs on the board.
Yeah. Because what I actually found was on the day, I didn't have too many difficulties. Like, as I said, my muscles were pretty well conditioned, and so I actually got my people who were watching said my actual pull-ups got better and better as the more I got into it. And the only thing I did, for some unknown reason, around the 700 mark, my shoulder started grouching. You know, used to have the old gear shift in a car, you know, down below there. Yeah. You know, when you grouch the gears. Well, every time I'd start to pull up, my shoulder would grouch, and I could just feel it, and it would just get to, I'd get to that point and it was fine.
Yeah.
But from 700, every one of them, and I'd sort of end up having to drop off the pull-up rack, and I was knocking down the painkillers, and so that was the only issue. But the next day it was fine. It just, I never had a problem with it since. So I don't know what happened.
I think like anything, even to use rugby as an analogy, the repetitive movement patterns, you know, the chronic overuse, the body's going to give a little bit of pushback. And I think whether that's in a full season of rugby or whether that's in, you know, a full immersion type event, like, you know, 6 hours of pull-ups, that chronic overuse, I mean, the squeaky wheel's going to need the grease, you know what I mean? Yeah. The shoulder's like, hold on a sec, if you keep going, if we're doing 2,000 today, I'm gonna let you know about it. You know, if you try and go a bit too far. So just on that topic, was there anything, I know you said that you felt it went really well, bar the shoulder. Would there be anything that you would, like, I'm a big believer myself. There's no such thing as failure. There's no such thing as mistakes. There's only feedback. Mm-hmm. So every little negative thing that we have or what we perceive as negative, and in my belief, there will literally always be a silver lining. We need to look for it sometimes because it's not always present, but there's something positive in there. But in your experience with that event, Warren, and just like everything around it, was there anything that you felt you could have done better, or was, you know, a stone you could have turned over and maybe worked on something, or maybe gave a little bit more attention here? Was there anything that jumped out at you that you thought you could have done a bit better, a bit of feedback, for want of a better term?
No, I mean, I had that discussion with you right at the outset, and I think even though I knew all the things we talked about, it really helped me focus my mind. So when I got off that call with you, I actually made some notes about all the points we talked about, and as the 3 weeks went through, I had my notes and I kept adding to them about, okay, what else am I going to do here? And so I thought that, like, in the end, my preparation was as good as I could have had it. Only thing I did do, like, I talked to a nutritionalist who was at the gym, and, you know, she'd said, give me some ideas of what my nutrition plan should be, which was kind of, because it was that kind of challenge, it was relatively short, 5 hours, 6 hours. It was kind of just having something that's going to give you a spike, you know, something sugary. And because I turned up with Powerade, three bottles of Powerade that was zero sugar. And she looked at me and she goes, well, that's not going to give you a spike, is it? I was like, what do you mean? And she goes, well, you mean to have sugar, you know, that's the thing that's going to give you that little burst of energy.
Yeah.
So that was the only thing that I kind of buggered up. But as I found on the day, I didn't really take much of the food or even the Powerade. Like, I drank water mostly, and I took the odd lolly and maybe a banana. Yeah. But I just didn't find that I was, you know, that I was needing my nutrition. And, of course, a lot of people turned up, so once I'd come off the rack, I'd end up talking, you know, and communicating with people around me. So, and I had a watch that would buzz on the minute.
Yeah.
And so as soon as the minute go, I'd be like, sorry, I've got to go. And then I'd be back on the rack, and then I'd come back off and go and talk to someone, and then someone else would turn up. And you know, like, for me, people coming along to support me was a really big thing. And yeah, I wanted to be able to acknowledge that by talking to them and, you know, going over and because they'd taken time out of their day to come down, and some of them brought their kids along.
Oh, so cool.
Yeah. So, no, I don't think there was really much that I would – that I felt I'd underdone.
That makes sense. And I suppose in contrast to that, what do you reckon you did really well? Like, what would you say you kind of reflect or zoom out and observe and think, yeah, I did really well. Like, I nailed that. I couldn't have done that any better. That went to plan, ticked all the boxes. Was there anything that sort of stands out that you think you did really well, Warren?
Yeah, a couple of things. Like, as you know, with doing pull-ups, blisters are an issue.
Yeah.
And once you've got raw skin on those hands, it's painful, isn't it? And you go, your hands are going, you're screaming every time you grab the bar, you're in pain, but you have to keep doing your pull-ups. And so I did do quite a bit of research on YouTube about blisters and things, and you know, some of the techniques people have used. You know, there was one guy that talked about, you know, when you grab the bar, you need to grab the bar that way and push up.
Yeah.
And so that you don't get that pinching once you grab the bar.
Gotcha.
And so, and he talked about, you know, it might take you 15 or 20 seconds to get your grip right before you actually do your pull-up. So, like, every time my minute thing went, I would take 10 or 15 seconds to get the right grip before I would do my pull-ups.
Yeah.
And I didn't have any issues with blisters until I got to about 900. I only had one little one. It wasn't around there. It was sort of in that top part.
Yeah, it's where you don't think you're going to get it,
Sorry, I'll just get rid of something that's just up on my screen. I thought, you know, I'd prepared that pretty well because, as you know, blisters, once you get them, it's tough going, isn't it?
It's like a rock in your shoe. It's like when you go for a run or something and you get like a small pebble. And I've said this to people before, imagine a big rock and you don't take it out of your shoe. You just keep running, you know, and that's the almost the parallel to doing pull-ups. It's like you may as well put your hand in a frying pan. Like, it's horrible.
Yeah. I had a guy from the gym actually do it with me.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, he was a younger guy, I don't know how old Cam is. He's in his 20s. I actually had another trainer, a girl, Hannah. She also did it with me.
Yeah.
And they were both kind of like, look, we'll do as much as we can with you. So the girl, Hannah, who did it with me, she did 600 and something. She did have a band on. So I'd said to her, I said, you have to have the least assisted band you can have, you know. And so she did it, and she had a goal of trying to do 500 with the band. So she got to about 660, I think, which was phenomenal. And the guy Cam, he actually did 1,000 with me. He hadn't had quite the same preparation. I think he'd done a week beforehand. Anyway,
and we got to about
300, and Cam just went quiet. You know, he wasn't talking, and we'd all get up on the minute and we'd do it, and then we'd sit down on our seats, and you know, the first couple of hundred we're all talking banter. And Cam just goes quiet, and at one stage I said, are you right, mate? He goes, no, I'm in the hurt locker. And he showed me his hands, and they were still worn. And he obviously gets, like, I get quite dry hands, and he said he'd get sweaty hands, and he was chalking up every time he got up. Anyway, he actually completed 1,000 with me. But, you know, the way I justify it is he's 20 years old. You know, I reckon I could whack out 1,000 when I'm 20, when I was 20.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the thing with the young ones. Like you said, 5 days preparation. You're like, yeah, I'm good to go. Four olds, we need a better run up. We need a bit.
That's right.
I've been training for this thing for like 3 years. I've had two punts at it and been training for the last, I don't know, maybe 4 months. Need heaps of training time, heaps of prep. So.
Well, the guy who has the world record, I Googled him when I did my challenge, and he trained for his for almost 3 years. It was some incredible period anyway, didn't he?
Yeah, Kane Eckstein. So he comes from an Ironman background, and his whole family is affiliated with the surf clubs here in Queensland. And to be honest, he really is a remarkable athlete. Like I actually know, have a good friend that was there the day he set the record.
Right.
And I was trying to pick holes. I was like, surely. A bit of that Anzac spirit. Surely he was jumping around, legs kicking and all that type of thing. And she's like, Jamie, I'm sorry, bro. They were immaculate from start. Yeah. He was the real deal. I mean, his back looks like a bloody Dorito. He looks like a chip, you know. But, mate, it's one of those things. You're just going to take your hat off to these remarkable athletes and you know, the sacrifice he must make to be at that level. And it really is phenomenal. Like when I did my second attempt, I was only 100 off David Goggins' record, which was like 4,000 and just over 4,000. So, and then when I researched, it put me in the top five in the world. And what was interesting is all four of us that were in the top five were all around the same. No one had got over 5,000. And then there was Kane, who was 7,620. Yeah. So you think that all the other four are in that area, and then you've got the next frame of reference is Kane, who's nearly 3,000 reps ahead of us. So I'm like, he's only human. What's the secret? He's got to come on.
That's right.
I messaged him once. I didn't hear anything. I thought, come on, bro. Let us in.
But, you know, it's guys like him who they set a new standard, don't they? And
yeah.
And then we, you know, people go, well, that's the standard now, you know, like you just go bigger and higher because that's the standard. So when I set my 6 hours for my 1,000, my workmate said to me, how'd you work out your 6,000? I said, oh, well, I saw a video of David Goggins. He set a record for 4,000. I thought it was in 24 hours, but actually it was in 17, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think he stopped. I think I could be wrong. I think I think it was set for 24 and he.
Right. Okay. So, but I said to my workmate, I said, oh, look, I watched David Goggins. He did 4,000 in 24 hours. So I've just divided by four and I've got 6 hours. And he goes, oh, so you're going to do it at world record pace as well. I was like, oh, I hadn't thought of it that way, but yeah, at world record pace, mate.
That may as well ride the coattails. Yeah, for sure. If it's good enough for David, it's good enough for me.
Look, my theory was if I even get close to David Goggins' timings, I'm very happy with myself.
And you did, mate. You did. That's the thing. You did. Not many people can say it is just pull-ups for sure, but it's such a unique exercise. It's so challenging. It's not like running or skipping or anything where there's momentum. You know, it's hard work. I'm not a mathematician by any means. I've played around with a few numbers just to look at it, especially when I was looking in relation to body weight. Mm. I was thinking, you know, every extra kilo, like with 8,000 reps, that's like 8 ton. That's for 1 kilo. So then I was like, man, I'm going to lose some weight. That's a lot of work. Like that's a lot of volume. Was it the force you pull, the distance, in the time, you know, how much you weigh? You could actually create a formula. I obviously didn't go that far. Plenty, bro, we don't go that far. we'll stop there. I'll just try and lose some weight. That'll be good enough. But Warren, what other resources did it sounded like you had? You sort of rode the wave a bit from support and what that meant to you. And that I understand, like people being grateful and appreciative when people come and take part. And that's the cool thing. When you do good things, it brings out the good in good people. So people want to get involved. I'm interested, did you have any other like resources to keep you focused or to keep you motivated? And I said you had a few jelly snakes, a few lollies, a banana, bit of sugar-free Powerade and supporters. Was there anything else that you...
Yeah, I had a inspiration board. So it was just a big whiteboard that I had put onto the wall at the gym, and I'd pre-written a few quotes, but I'd taken a couple of marker pens with me for people, not just for me to write something up on the board. It was funny because I had it at home before I took it to the gym, and I'd written a couple of David Goggins quotes, you know, I don't finish until, you know, the mahi's done or the work's done, you know. Like that. And I had these sort of quotes on the water. My wife comes in, she goes, "What's this shit all about?"
Is this the same with the lawns?
But I had that and you know, people came in and wrote things on it and I'd, you know, read them and it would just give me another little kick, you know, reading what someone else has written. And
great idea.
Yeah. And so, and even things like when I'd get to a moment where I'd just write something about, you know, what am I trying to achieve from this?
Mm.
So that was sort of one thing that I did that I think I got the idea from you. I'm sure that was one of the things we talked about. And I was sort of humming and hawing about doing it, but in the end I thought, look, I need everything. I've got a checklist of what I want and should have. And so that is definitely something that I would recommend. And as I said, you know, the fact that other people wrote on it was really
powerful. You mind if I borrow that, Warren? That's something I've never ever considered myself. Yeah. And I reckon that, God, that is powerful. I've got goosebumps thinking about that. I could only imagine some of the things people would have written for you, bro.
Well, like I saw your burpee challenge and I saw how many people, you know, came along and watched and, you know, I saw them dancing and, you know, doing all these different things, hackers, you know, and all this stuff.
Oh, yeah. A couple of brown boys turned up.
Can you imagine those people writing a message to you that you can read when you're in your little breaks? And, it's like, it just gives you... You know, there's moments when you get a little bit emotional. I'm not an emotional person. It's as good as a sugar Powerade, put it that way.
Yeah. Oh, mate. Well, I'm the polar opposite to you, mate. I'm a handbag. I'll be in tears half the time, no doubt. So I've probably got to watch what people write. Be the fella crying in the corner.
Because the thing was, when I decided to do it, I was just going to do it privately. And But I mentioned it to someone at the gym, one of the trainers at the gym, and then suddenly the gym was like, "Oh, we'll support you." And because I had said to them, I said, "Look, I'm going to do this challenge, and can I borrow a key to the gym? Because I'm thinking it's starting at 4 a.m. and I'll just open up and I'll let myself in, and then I'll just start my challenge. And when people start rocking in about 9 o'clock, I'm just going to be on the pull-up rack." And the gym was like, no. A couple of the trainers said they'll start with you and you know, we'll get the members involved in supporting you. And because I, you know, I'm very much I'm a quiet sort of in the background kind of person about that stuff. And I think, you know, part of my anxiety around having people coming to support me was, failure. Yeah. You know, that fear of failure God, everyone knows about this.
Committed.
Yeah, I'm committed and everyone knows. And it's not just me against myself now. It's me and, you know.
And the weight of the world. They all know.
And the gym, one of the ladies at the gym was the local radio announcer. So next thing we're on her radio show talking about it. So the whole of Dunedin hears about it. And so, but in hindsight, that support I got from the people who were at the gym and people who sent messages, it makes a difference. Like it definitely makes a difference on the day. And so if I'd done it on my own, I may not have achieved what I achieved in the end. So as much as I wanted it to be private, I'm really pleased it wasn't in the end. Yeah. And the one thing I did do, and again, it was kind of like a confidence thing. So when I posted on Movember that I was going to do 1,000 pull-ups, I kind of gave myself an out. I said, look, I'm going to do 1,000 pull-ups, but I'm going to invite 3 people to come along and do 50 pull-ups as a contribution. And so in my mind, I was thinking, well, I really only have to do 850 because these 3 guys are going to do 50 each, which is going to get me to 1,000. Yeah. And I ended up inviting, in the end, 3 All Blacks that I knew. Guy Tom Willis was an All Black captain. He was a hooker. And when I asked Tom, because he works with me in the law office, he was like, he says, oh, there's no way I can do 50 pull-ups. You're fucking kidding yourself. I said, well, you got a month, mate. You got a month to train. And he came along and did it. And I had a guy, Ben Smith, who played on the wing for the All Blacks. He did 50. Although on the day, because I was doing, overhand grip, as you do. So when Ben turned up, he goes, hey, what's that? Can I do underhand grip? And I was going, nah, SAS standard here, bro.
Only the elite here. This is top tier.
And Aaron Smith, the All Black halfback, came along and he did 50.
Jesus, it's a celebrity hour in there, bro. Holy moly.
So in the end, even though I'd kind of given myself that out that I only had to do 850, I ended up doing the 1,000 anyway. Although, how I said I had an issue with my shoulder. When I got to the 900 mark, I said to Aaron Smith, I'm thinking of calling it because of my shoulder. I just don't want to fuck my shoulder for good. Yeah. Aaron goes, nah. He goes, nah. He goes, bro, if your shoulder's buggered, it's already buggered. So don't worry about it.
May as well finish the job.
That's right. So, again, just having those guys there at the end, really gave me another lift. Because once they all started, my whole minute thing went out the window and it was just up, down, up, down. As soon as the rat came free, we were back on it. So I think we finished, I'd scheduled to do 6 hours, and I think we finished sort of just over 5 hours, maybe 5:30.
That's so good. Nice to get an early finish too. When you think it's 6 hours and you bring it home a bit earlier, that's always nice. Speaking of what on the All Blacks said to you, have you ever had any bit of wisdom or from some of the professional athletes that you work with, has anything really moved you, Warren? Like where you've kind of gone, oh my God, what a great, powerful insight or something. Has anything ever stood out to you?
I'm sure there has. It's just whether I can pull it out of my mind.
Or even a lesson that you sort of received from working with the caliber of clients you more than likely have and have worked with in the past.
Yeah, I think you see in professional sports people, you see the good and the bad. I was involved with a guy that you got in Aussie, you'll know well, a guy, Brad Thorne.
Yeah.
And he came to New Zealand to play rugby and he had a manager and I never spoke to Brad. I spoke to his manager and helped him through because he was trying to get him signed into the New Zealand system. And I knew the manager and he rang me up and he said, oh, I'm having trouble with the contract. I'm trying to get them to agree to this. I said, no, they won't agree to that. But if you restructure it this way, you'll achieve the same thing and they'll agree to that. And so that all happened and it got done. And I saw Brad Thorne maybe 4 months after he got to New Zealand. And as I said, I'd never spoke to Brad in that whole process. So I'm at a function and I'm in a circle. I come into a circle of All Blacks and a couple of administrators, and I get introduced to Brad Thorne.
Yeah.
And nothing said between us because there's other people around, and just, oh, Brad, this is Warren Alcott. Hey, Kate, Brad, how are you? Nice to meet you. And, you know, a bit of chit-chat. Yeah. Anyway, we talked as a group, and then eventually I started to move away from that group. And he, as I moved away and I was on my own, he came and tapped me on the shoulder. And he said, I just want to thank you for the work you did for me. And, you know, that little bit of thanks, you know, just was a little thing, but I've never forgotten it. He didn't have to do that. Yeah. I didn't even know he knew that I helped him out, you know, through his manager. So that's what I mean, you know, like the good guys are good guys, and the little things count. You know, when people help you out, you know, you should be able to say thank you to them and acknowledge them.
Yeah. What a quality man, though. Yeah, with that sort of humble perspective, just to,
yeah, like,
it's a little thing, but it's such a powerful thing.
Yeah, that's right. Look, there will be lots of examples I can think of on-field things, but I just can't pull them out.
Yeah, that's right. You're in isolation, mate. 7 days. You get... Yeah, it might come later. Just on that, I'm mindful of time, Warren, and you've just been amazing, mate, what you've shared. I feel like I was there with you. I can actually really see, like, you're very, what's the word? It was very, not ambiguous, but I could just see what the day would have been like, the event. And it sounds incredible. Like, do you have any suggestions, any pointers for, like, as we know, there's lots of people that do fundraising now. There's a fundraiser every fortnight, which is great. I think it's a great thing, people doing good things. But like a special little tip for those that are going to go after a real challenge. And like was mentioned earlier on, in my mind, I heard the statement, I don't know who said it, but I heard, you know, it's only a challenge if it's a challenge. So it needs to truly, truly challenge you. And it doesn't necessarily have to be an athletic thing. It could be anything, career, business, personal. But like, especially from your perspective, what's a bit of advice for somebody that's going to go after something big? What would you suggest? Like, what, any tips for a person that might be watching, listening, that's been inspired by your story, your journey, even, mate, and professionally is phenomenal. And then also what you've done physically.
I just think whether it's in business or anything else, it's preparation, planning. You know, you can set yourself goals, but unless you've done the work and you've done it in a way that's well planned, you won't necessarily achieve the goals. I think that's, like, I thought about it every day in October last year.
Yeah.
November last year, like every day I'd think about an aspect of, you know, that challenge, even down to timing. You know, you know what it's like. You will have worked out how many you need to do a minute. If you want to take breaks, you know, how many you need to do a minute if you want to have breaks or not have breaks. You have I had a plan about how many I was going to do in the first hour, how many I was going to do in the second hour, you know, and sticking to your plan. And I think, you know, like when you talk to professional athletes, particularly like in my game, rugby players, they all have a plan and they go out and they execute the plan that they've agreed and that they've prepared for. Having said all that, though, you know, there is that great boxing quote that everyone's got to play until they get punched in the face. So you have to have a contingency plan for something that goes wrong.
Yeah.
You know? But no, I think it's as simple as that, you know, just planning and preparation. And there's no way I could have done that without having done the conditioning. You know, as tough as anyone thinks they are, and I'm not saying I'm that tough mentally, but as tough as anyone thinks they are, there's no way you're going to do 1,000 pull-ups or 8,000 pull-ups if you haven't done the preparation and the work and conditioning. So I guess that, yeah, I know that sounds boring, but, you know.
It's the simple things, I reckon.
Yeah.
Sometimes we can make things as complicated as we want to, but we can make them as simple as we want to. And I think that that advice is poignant. I think it's, and great for anything.
Well, I was, before I got into the sports game, I was a court lawyer.
Ah, okay.
I was a litigator. I did civil and criminal litigation. And like I would approach any court case that I had in the same kind of way. Like I would know every aspect of that case. I'd work, I'd be at the office at night times, I'd be reading evidence, I'd be reading cases. And so, you know, going into court, it was like, it's like a physical challenge, you know. You have to know every aspect of that case. And so that if a question comes up, you actually know the answer before, you know, before the person answers it.
Yeah.
And so it's the same in law, you know, it's just preparation and planning. And you know what it's like as a business person, and you know,
planning,
you know.
Yeah, it gets to the point. Yeah, I certainly, I just think that's a great bit of advice, and you're right. You, when you have planned and you've done the due diligence and you've done your research and whatever it is you're doing, things seem a lot more efficient and effective. Like you said, you're not, well, maybe not you're ahead of the ball, or you know what's going on, but you're certainly, as you said, prepared and and done that work. Because it's certainly the contrast to that when you don't. Oh my God, you know, you can only wing so much, and the higher the stakes, the higher, you know, you don't want to be winging it. So
I think the other thing too, which I did learn by default, was having a plan for after it when the challenge is over, like that day, because your body, you put your body through it, but. And I remember coming home and everyone saying, oh, you'll be off to bed, you know, but I got home, I had a shower, and my elbows were sore. So I knew that if I went to lay on the couch or something, I'd be broken, you know, when I woke up. Fortunately, a mate of mine, he was an All Black as well. You may remember him when you were from your time in New Zealand, a guy, Jamie Joseph.
Oh, yeah, that's my era.
Big loose forward. Yeah. So I got a text from Jamie, who had texted me that morning saying, hey, bro, do you want any Kinners and Power? And I was like, yep, I'm in. So I went home, had a shower, and I went to his place with a bucket, and he gave me Power and Kinner. So I had to go home and shell the Kinner and the Power, and my arms were killing me. I was like, I was having a Spates beer at the same time. So I was getting some carbs and I was eating some kind of bit of protein and one for me and one for the bowl, and, you know, and but it was the best thing I did, was just to keep moving. Like it was probably another hour, you know, just moving and eating and because, you know, your body does seize up at some point.
That's really good. And you're actually right. We don't think enough about post and what happens and the emotional come down or whatever happens. I'm no doctor, obviously, but I know there's a hormonal imbalance. It's interesting you said, I'm going, you know, might lie down or something. After these big events, you know, trying to sleep, I've got more chance of flying in the air.
That's right.
The adrenals and everything. It takes a while for the old car, for the old Mark III 1978 Ford Escort to wind down. Holy moly, I revved the engine out. I just got to slow down.
No, it's the same with this little Mini too.
Well, mate, most importantly, you did it, and I bet you those are the best-tasting Kinner and Powers I think you've ever had, and you chased it with the Spates as well.
The Pure Jamie Milne Podcast.